With that, I welcome Jill. I can't see you, but I know you're online. Welcome to Jill Switter from the FASB staff. We're very happy to have you here today to talk about your conceptual framework document. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Sue. Thanks for inviting me. I've been asked to keep my remarks brief because I know that a few of you have some comments or questions that you'd like to go through. So I will, as quickly as I can, go through my presentation and then happy to talk about whatever it is you want to discuss or answer any questions. Okay, I have shared my presentation with you all, so hopefully you can see that. The way that the FASB has organized their project is a little bit different than the IASB did theirs. There are three topics on the FASB's agenda related to the conceptual framework. A few years ago, the board went through a prioritization exercise and determined that these three areas needed the most attention. There are only brief discussions of measurement and presentation in the board's current framework, and neither of them seem to be satisfactory. The FASB issued an exposure draft on the presentation section of the framework in 2016, and the board recently issued an exposure draft on elements, and that will be the focus of my presentation today. The exposure draft describes 10 elements of financial statements. The objective of the project was to revise certain aspects of the definitions of the elements, and as a result, the board made revisions to the definitions of assets, liabilities, revenues, expenses, gains, and losses. However, as a result of the deliberations, the FASB decided that certain elements didn't need revision, and those are equity elements, investments by owners, distributions to owners, and comprehensive income. Assets are defined currently in FASB concept statement number 6. They are defined as probable future economic benefits obtained or controlled by a particular entity as a result of past transactions or events. However, there are certain aspects of this definition that have caused problems for the board in the past, and they specifically relate to terminology. Some of the issues surrounded the terminology of the word probable and future economic benefits, and the word controlled, and the phrase as a result of past transactions or events. So basically the whole definition at some point or another has had an issue with the wording. Concept Statement 6 also defines a liability as a probable future sacrifice of economic benefits arising from a present obligation of a particular entity to transfer assets or provide services to other entities in the future as a result of past transactions or events. So some of the same terminology issues arise in the definition of an asset and a liability in the definitions that the board has today. However, the liability definition raises issues when trying to determine when one becomes presently obligated. And that seemed to be a focus of the board's deliberations when amending their definition of a liability. The FASB's proposed definitions of assets and liabilities described in the exposure draft are noted on this slide. An asset is a present right of the entity to an economic benefit, and the liability is a present obligation of the entity to transfer an economic benefit. The definition of an asset in the exposure draft eliminates what we would consider the problematic terminology, and it also removes the notion of control. It removes the word itself, but however, the board believes we're still maintaining the notion of control. The definition of liability in the exposure draft has been changed to eliminate the terms that were widely misunderstood. It also clarifies when an entity becomes presently obligated, and it fundamentally expands the population of liabilities to include present obligations that are settled with an entity's own shares rather than exclusively with assets. The FASB staff believes that the FASB definition and the IASB definition would produce similar results. It is important to note that both the IASB and the FASB definitions focus on rights. However, the FASB decided to omit the word control in its definition of the asset. While the board concluded that the notion of control was an important aspect of the asset definition, it was not clear to the board whether the explicit term control added anything significant to the definition of an asset. Those considerations are addressed by the inclusion of the term present right in the definition of an asset. If an entity has a present right to an economic benefit, that would seem to be sufficient to establish the fact that the asset is an asset of the entity. Indeed, if an entity has exclusive rights, presumably it can deny or regulate access to that benefit to others, thereby implying control. The FASB and the ISB definitions of a liability are quite different. Although both definitions focus on the present obligation, the FASB's definition does not include a notion of no practical ability to avoid. And the FASB's definition is clear that some share settled instruments may meet the definition of a liability. The most difficult application of the asset definition is to intangibles, particularly internally generated intangible assets. And the FASB concluded whether an intangible asset meets the definition of an asset should be indifferent as to whether the intangible was purchased, acquired in a business combination, or internally developed. The question is, at what point in the development process is a right created? The board concluded that both the identifiability and the separability criteria should help board members in assessing whether intangible assets meet the definition of an asset. The FASB believes these criteria will help it to identify the right, the economic benefit, and the rights that are exclusive to the entity. These criteria provide the board with reasonable evidence that an asset exists and perhaps should be recognized. So we have a few more application issues related to the definition of a liability. And these were very difficult issues that the FASB discussed during its deliberations. One area of confusion in the past has been distinguishing business risks from liabilities. And the FASB believes that business risks result come about as the nature of the business and where and when and how an entity conducts his business. For example, airlines have particular risks that a plane may crash, but that does not produce a present obligation for the consequences of a plane crash that has yet to occur. Those risks are not liabilities because exposure to a potential negative consequence does not constitute a present obligation. At some point, a business risk may result in an entity incurring an obligation. Although business risk might exist on the statement of financial position date, an entity might be required to sacrifice economic benefits in the future as a result of the risk. The entity may not yet have a present obligation as a result of the business risk. One of the difficulties relating to the concept of a present obligation is a situation in which the amount, timing associated with obligations are uncertain. Many of those situations involve what commonly have been referred to as stand-ready obligations. Sometimes present obligations with uncertain amounts and timing are referred to as contingent liabilities. The term contingent liability has been a source of confusion because the term is often thought to refer to situations in which the existence of a present obligation depends on the occurrence or the non-occurrence of a future event. Liabilities only arise from non-contingent obligations. Therefore, the occurrence or the non-occurrence of a future event does not by itself give rise to a liability. The FASB thinks the term stand ready was always intended to describe a present obligation with an uncertain outcome. The existence of the obligation does not depend on the occurrence or non-occurrence of a specified future event. It is the outcome of the present obligation that depends on the occurrence or non-occurrence of the specified future event. The board decided the concept should explain that these are present obligations upon future events without continued use of the term stand ready. Constructive or equitable obligations are identified and discussed in the board's current framework. The constructive obligations are not contractual obligations, but instead they represent circumstances in which an entity can become obligated even though no contract exists. The board carried forward that language that we currently have in today's framework and included it in its exposure draft. Distinguishing between liabilities and equity is a sticky issue that both the FASB and the ISB have talked about on a conceptual and a standards level basis. For many, this issue is more about the effect on net income than it is about the balance sheet classification. And that's because of very different views about how particular instruments should be subsequently measured and how the changes in value are reflected in the statement of comprehensive income. However, that's actually a question of measurement and presentation rather than one of elements in their definitions. A particular financial instrument meeting the definition of a liability does imply that it should be subsequently measured using a particular measurement method. Similarly, when an instrument does not meet the definition of a liability, that is, it is an equity instrument, that does not imply that the instrument should not be remeasured or that a gain or loss should not be recognized upon settlement of the arrangement. In developing a concept for the definition of a liability, the FASB used the four basic examples that are listed on this slide. Under the board's current exposure draft, all circumstances except the first one would meet the definition of a liability. Both the revenue and the expense definitions use the phrase other activities in the board's current framework. The FASB staff doesn't really know the intended purpose of that phrase, and it's also interesting to point out that the definitions do not use the term in the exact same way. Revenues result from other activities, but expenses result from carrying out other activities. The focus on distinguishing between revenues from gains and losses by the use of the words ongoing, major, or central, peripheral, or incidental is not particularly helpful in today's framework. In deliberating the definition of revenues, expenses, gains, and losses, the board built on three fundamental ideas. First, revenues and expenses should include transactions that are from major or central operations. The terminology major central operations, as we just discussed, is a little bit difficult. Gains and losses may not be peripheral or incidental transactions to many entities. And the application of the present definition of revenue and expenses seem to some more consistent with the notion of operating income. The board's current framework uses terms other activities, ongoing, major, or central operations to distinguish revenues from gains and expenses from losses. It is intended to refer to all revenue and expenses or only those that relate to revenue and expenses from other activities. As a result, the FASB decided to remove the term ongoing, major, or central operations from the proposed definition of revenue and expense. The board decided to retain the term other activities in those definitions. The inclusion of this term allows sources such as investment income to be considered revenue and charitable contributions to be made to be considered an expense. It's not the FASB's intent to suggest that the term other activities is an all-encompassing notion that captures every inflow and outflow. Obviously, the biggest difference between the FASB and the ISB's framework is that the FASB defines gains and losses, while the ISB framework does not. In discussing revenues, expenses, gains, and losses, some board members questioned whether defining those elements was necessary, given that they are often perceived to be a matter of presentation. However, the FASB decided to retain all four of the elements of comprehensive income. The FASB also concluded that retaining the elements, gains and losses, as distinct from elements revenues and expenses was informative in understanding the composition of the statement of comprehensive income. So that concludes the remarks that I had prepared. If anybody has any questions or would like to discuss the ED, I'm happy to help.
Thank you very much, Jill. So if anybody wants to comment, if you could indicate in the chat room. Peter.
Thanks, Sue, and thanks, Jill, for the presentation. I'd like to comment on four things, and they're all really related to what we looked at in the ISB project on the framework, and questions about how much we deal with in the definitions themselves, how much in the supporting guidance, and how much is best left to standards level. So Jill mentioned the question of control. The ISB decided to keep that in the definition. There's an argument that it's redundant, but it didn't seem to cause any difficulty, and the ISB felt there was no real compelling reason to remove it. On past events, so the ISB also decided to keep ISB in the definitions themselves rather than relating that to the guidance. There is also an argument that that's redundant as well, but again, it didn't seem to cause that much difficulty. And in some situations, thinking about the past event can also help you think about the recognition and measurement issues that come along with it. So on balance, the board decided to keep it in the definitions. In addition, the next point I'm coming to on liabilities, actually the notion of past events helped a bit with some of the supporting guidance there. On liabilities, Jill mentioned the no practical ability to avoid, and the board spent quite a lot of time discussing that, and there were really two aspects to that. One is that whole question of what do you do if you have an obligation that's not strictly legally enforceable yet. So that's the area of constructive obligation, no realistic ability to avoid, and things of that kind. And so the board felt it would be useful to build up some of the guidance on that. It's not actually in the definition itself, but it's in the supporting guidance. And secondly, the board spent quite a lot of time thinking about situations where you've got an obligation that's accumulating in some way, but where in some circumstances the entity might be able to take action to avoid it, at least theoretically. And so that's, for example, situations like unvested employee benefits or some types of levies. And that was an area where, in the standards, the board seemed to be reaching some inconsistent conclusions, and so felt that adding some guidance in the framework would be useful. On liabilities versus equity, I think first of all, there's one important point, and it was interesting reading the FASB's exposure draft. I think you make good points in there, but not consistently, really. And the important point to try to emphasize is that equity is not just a residual, it's not a mathematical calculation, but it is a residual interest, it's a type of claim. And I think it's very easy to slip into the shorthand of saying equity is a residual. But actually thinking about some of those liabilities equity issues, it's useful to remember that it is a claim we're talking about and not just a mathematical calculation. One other comment on liabilities versus equity. Some of those issues come about because you have instruments that have some characteristics of liability and some of equity. And I suspect that's something that's probably best addressed at the standards level rather than the conceptual framework. Final point I wanted to make is about the element for the performance statement. So we stuck with the idea of only having two elements there, income and expenses. We saw no compelling reason really to subdivide them at the conceptual level. We felt it was probably more usefully addressed at the standards level work we were doing on presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. Shawaji?
Hello. Thank you, Jill. I'm speaking on behalf of the AOSSG. Just two small clarifications, or you can say the concerns. As far as presentation part is concerned, every jurisdiction normally, as per the laws and regulations, has different formats. Now, in case if the presentation is same, how do we deal with, or that will be optional? That is number one. And number two, in an asset definition, you talked about a right rather than a control. FASB has used the word right, while IASB is talking about a control as at present. Is it possible to have a distinction between a right and a control? These are only the two small points. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you. Jill, I don't know whether you want to
take your second question.
Jim will come in. So, Jill, do you want to respond?
Yes, I'll take your... I will. I'll take your second question first about the definition of a right and the notion of the control. Just because in the definition the word control does not appear, it doesn't mean that the board does not think that a notion of control is important. And in the document, the FASB described how the notion of control is already, in their view, embedded in how they are considering a right. I'm sorry, remind me of the first question again. So I think that's the second question. The first question was about the term present.
No, I was just talking about, as far as presentation part is concerned, if yes. The presentation format is specified, yes. Normally in every jurisdiction, the law and regulation has given the different formats. So I said that concern whether it will be optional.
Yes, I understand that concern. That's not necessarily something that we, on a conceptual level, have to deal with in the U.S. But I agree, for some jurisdictions, that might be a concern.
Thank you. Jim, do you want to come in?
Yeah, maybe just a couple points to add to Jill. And one is a starting point. Our framework is not authoritative, so it isn't, entities are not directed to look to the framework, although we certainly know that's in some cases they do, but it's fundamentally a tool for the board. And I think in that respect, while there are some differences in what we proposed compared to the IASB's framework, I think, as Jill said, I don't personally believe they drive fundamentally different outcomes. Perhaps the one area where there's the potential for a little bit of difference is the distinction between liabilities and equity. Maybe we have a little bit different starting point there, at least in what we say in the framework. But even there, I think Jill described the end post, that is, you know, I'll just use the term fixed for fixed instrument would be classified in most cases as equity. I think a variable number of shares to settle a fixed monetary amount we believe is a liability. I don't believe our framework defines exactly where that line is. And in my, at least as I went through the discussions, I think we fundamentally believe that has to be resolved at a standard setting level, or at least at this point. So I don't believe, resolve that through our definition. The comments about control, as Jill said, some board members felt that even though you might be able to view that as being redundant, that is, you don't have a right unless you control the right. I think a couple of us, including myself, thought that perhaps including control in the definition would be useful. But at least from my individual standpoint, not a significant enough concern to dissent to the ED. I think we've explained it. I just personally believe it might be useful to elevate. If folks agree or disagree, please feel free to give comments either online or offline to our team. Similar to concerns about, or not concerns, but differences in the definition about past event. We understand that in some cases that's been adds less light in certain fact patterns, maybe more light in others, and so we eliminated that. Interestingly, we kept the word present, right, where you could also argue that present is redundant. You can't have a right unless it's a present right. So we've chosen to emphasize some words in the definition and some words in the discussion. I think similar to what Peter described. Maybe last point that Joe covered is we did maintain four elements: revenues, expenses, gains, and losses. A couple of us would have preferred to say that that's really a matter of presentation. I personally don't think, when you think about elements of financial statements, it's not so clear to me that the distinction between those items raises to the level of being elemental versus a matter of presentation. But I don't think, as a majority of the board, we didn't think it did harm to start to describe how you might distinguish those. So maybe just a few points to add there.
Linda.
Thanks, Sue. I just want to build a little on the comments that Jim made in one respect, and it won't surprise anybody who knows Canada to know that we consider it important that the two frameworks remain largely consistent given practices in Canada where we have both IFRS and US GAAP reporters. So I would just encourage all of us to build on what Jim said. In Canada, typically we don't see a big practice where preparers and auditors rely on the framework to make accounting decisions. It's largely they look to the standards. And so we see the conceptual frameworks as essentially tools for standard setters. So I think that's a bias that exists. Certainly it's a personal bias of mine, but it's a bias that exists within our jurisdiction. But we think it's very important that concepts are discussed amongst international standard setters and views shared. And I think what you're seeing in what's happening with the FASB, Jill used the word similar. And so that's helpful. And Jim has made some comments that are helpful as well. But I think it behooves all of us to talk through these things and as much as possible trying to keep the two conceptual frameworks consistent.
Okay, thanks, Linda. Tommaso?
I would like to echo on what Linda said, I mean, at the very end. I think that the use, probably preparers do not use so much the conceptual framework, but usually, I have to say that more recently I've seen a number of cases in which ISA for the determining accounting policies has been used, and so they refer to conceptual framework. But the conceptual framework is fundamental for the next improvements or the new standards. So, having the two frameworks between FASB and ISB aligned, I think it's a value. So I would agree with Linda on one end. On the other end, I would also say that even if, as Peter said before, the IFRS conceptual framework is redundant in some circumstances, I think that it's probably more easy to understand. Just if you take the example of the definition of an asset, I'm not an English mother tongue, but when I consider a present right to an economic benefit, I don't think that I have in all my assets to represent a right to an economic benefit. Is a resource that can create an economic benefit in the future. So this is just an example for an external reader that may create probably some confusion. So on one end, I would say I would prefer that there is more alignment on the wording. On the other end, I would also ask, I don't know if FASB has in mind or the ISB staff has in mind to consider the implications, the potential implications of having these differences in wording. My comment, and I close, is that at the end of the day, no many difference, there shouldn't be many differences, but I don't know if you have any plan to consider it, that any implication.
Thanks, Tommaso. Catherine?
Yeah, I just wanted to echo as well what Linda was saying, that the framework is a starting point for standard setting. And so the question is how much comparability we want to have between the standards. And so we have to be careful of it's something that we wanted to mention, that this is something that this is the basis for standard setting, and comparability would be good for the users of financial statements, we think. And the things that were mentioned and that were discussed within the CFSS are the same as already mentioned. So, for example, the past event, or as well the distinction between equity and liabilities. So that was discussed within CFSS. That was just a short remark to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. I think with that, I don't see anybody else who wants to come in. So thank you very much, Jill, for your presentation and for answering the questions. It's nice to have you with us. And we can move on to the next agenda item. Okay, so we move now to agenda paper 4, the update and agenda planning paper. And I believe Deho's back in the hot seat again.
Okay, thank you, Sue. So next, we'll move on to agenda paper 4, which is again our routine agenda on project updates, as well as the agenda planning for the upcoming ASAP meeting in December this year. Appendix B sets out the status of the various projects as at the end of August, and Appendix C summarizes the feedback that was received from the April meeting and how the various project teams plan to work on this advice. The proposed agenda for the next ASAP meeting is set out in Appendix A. As you might have noticed, we could have a slightly longer agenda for the December ASAP meeting, and we will perhaps have a discussion for a couple of hours each day over 2 days, given that the meeting will be held virtually with members coming from different time zones and jurisdictions. So with that, we would just like to know if members have any comments on the agenda or if there is anything that members would like to add on to the agenda. Thank you.
Okay, any agenda observations or suggestions? Linda.
Thanks, Sue. Just briefly, I already commented about the number of documents coming out, and so I'd encourage you, you've already acknowledged it, Sue, but I'd encourage you when I look at, you're giving relatively, you're indicating so far relatively long comment periods, but there's things that are going to go into the January, February, March arena where we will basically have no time to talk to preparers or other stakeholders because they're going to be consumed with a year end that includes COVID-19 items. So I just encourage you to make sure that you take a look at that. And the only question I had about December, or maybe it's an April discussion, I don't know, Sue, is that when will we get a chance to hear some of the discussions and the comment letter analysis around primary financial statements?
Okay, maybe at the end of the staff could respond maybe to some of the questions. If that's all right, we'll accumulate them. And so if somebody at the end could talk about PFS. Chiara?
Yes, very, very briefly. We issued our discussion paper on crypto assets in July this year with a long comment period until July 21, and we presented it last 2 days ago in the International Forum. We would like, if you think it is of interest, to present also to this forum, either in December or in March. This is equally convenient because we will be engaging more and more in outreach activities.
Okay, thank you, Chiara. Shawaji?
Thank you, Sue. I received the update on agenda planning from Australia. They're saying that given the issue of discussion paper of business combination and the common control, it is delayed until November 2020. And therefore, they recommend that ISAP discussion is also postponed to provide jurisdictions with more time to analyze the proposals and undertake initial outreach with stakeholders. Number two, the exposure draft on management commentary is expected in February 2021. Hence, they have suggested to know what will be discussed at the ISAP meeting of December. There is a view that the objective is not clearly indicated in the Appendix B. And the third comment is, they are also interested to know more clarity on the objective of discussion in December 2020 ISAP meeting on financial instruments with characteristics of equity. So these are the few clarifications for December 2020 agenda planning. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll add that to the list for the staff to think about at the end. Rodrigo? Rodrigo, do you want to come in? We can't hear you if you're speaking. Still can't hear you. Maybe we could go to Tommaso and we'll come back to you, Rodrigo, if you can try there for a second. Tommaso?
Yeah, just a very quick question on the December 2020 proposal agenda. Do we have Business Commission and Common Control, but the discussion paper will be published in November. I don't know if there is a specific reason to discuss in December, or we want to wait that we collect views from stakeholders, or postpone to another meeting. So just a curiosity.
Okay, thank you. And can I just try, Rodrigo, have you had any luck in terms of unmuting? Doesn't look like it. Sorry.